My name is Bill Posey, and the name of this session is Habitat in Zaire. So, not do zebras live in Zaire?
Oh no! I'm
everyone's been everyone's been asking that, and I'll say this much: where I was in Zaire, there were no zebras. But in eastern Zaire, there are zebras. Zaire is better known to an older generation as the Belgian Congo.
And, so I missed the good part?
Yeah. You have to check out the tape now.
Too bad. Are there zebras in Zaire? That's what I want to know about.
Oh, okay. In East Zaire there are. But where I live there are no zebras.
So there are Zairians.
There are Zairians.
Did you hear that, Julian? Okay. Now you know the answer.
Enlightenment for the day. But I lived and worked in northwestern Zaire, up in a region called Equateur, an equator region, which and the equator runs through Zaire in the southern part of that region. And it's rainforest, and it's right there in the Congo Basin, the largest basin, river basin in the world besides the Amazon, of course, second only to the Amazon. And
you were Peace Corps?
No, I was with Habitat for Humanity. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah, well, that's not Jimmy Carter's Habitat.
Well, he works with it. Uh-huh. And the founder of Habitat is Millard Fuller. And it's a Christian housing ministry, very grassroots oriented. And the philosophy of Habitat is to help people so they can help themselves, basically, and make it possible for the lower income people to own a decent house.
Yeah, our daughter did the same thing, but it was with a different group. She worked in Nicaragua, and that was with a New York originated group called Architects. It's got a very long an acronym, but it's Architects and Urban Planners for housing or something. Same kind of thing, except it doesn't have a Christian base.
Right. I see. Well, Habitat is pretty much ecumenical, and welcomes, you know, just basically anybody and everybody who's willing to go along with the statements that Habitat makes about Christianity and open to both Protestant and Catholic. And as a matter of fact, there's a lady in South Africa with Habitat who is Jewish. So they're pretty much open because they basically have to be, I guess, because they're not supported by one specific denomination like Holden is with the Lutheran. But I was over there in Zaire for almost 3 years in a town called Gemena. And the way it worked there was we would go into a place and work with a local committee there. And try and emphasize that I'm not the one in charge. You know, I'm working with y'all and for y'all, and the committee makes the decisions. Mm-hmm. But try and educate them on Habitat's philosophy and tell them why we're here, what purpose we're here for, and what we're not here for, you know.
What was the political response to your presence?
The political response was, it was good sometimes. Most of the time it was pretty good, but they weren't real cooperative. Mobutu really doesn't want to encourage development all that much. He goes along with it so he won't be kicked out of office. But if he were to develop the roads, then once you had transportation and communication, it would pretty much develop on its own. But he makes sure that there is no communication or transportation system to really speak of. And so it's difficult to get supplies to the project. And so there again, we tried to use as much as we could of the building materials that were there on site.
Mm-hmm. We had concrete and rock foundation. And we had brick walls and that were compressed. We made them ourselves out of this machine, this Thermarian machine. Mm-hmm. And we would put a cement crepissage, they called it a stucco, on the outside and inside of the walls. Mm-hmm. And that way it would weatherproof it more or less. And the earth itself, as long as it's protected from the elements, will last, you know, 100 years, who knows how long. And then we had a tin roof.
Well, you couldn't use wood there, it would be insects.
There are certain woods that the termites don't eat. And as big a forest as it is, you're right, there's really not that many woods you can really build with. So you're really limited to what you can construct out of. And so most homes will be a combination of earth and stick, would be the traditional. And the wood that we use would be used in the shutters and doors, and then the trusses for the roof. But that's all the wood that we were able to use. It was pretty expensive too, really. Comparatively speaking.
Did you just mill your own?
What's that? No, we bought it from a fellow who had a coffee plantation and several saws, and we bought this from a private industry there, and he would provide wood for us. And it was better, it was easier on us to do that. We had trucks to upkeep and maintain, and there the last year I was there, we sold a lot of that stuff and tried to get down to real basics, you know, carry it. If you can't carry it in a wheelbarrow, we can't use it, you know, kind of like that. So trying to use as much indigenous material as possible. This is really informal here. My goal was to, as far as this session was concerned, is to just be informative and tell a little bit about Habitat and Zaire and just encourage people to get involved in their own way. Instead of giving a check or writing a letter out, you know, I think it's really important that we all get involved in some way.
How many volunteers does the organization have, and where are they located?
Habitat has started out in the late 70s, and in 1980 I think we built 120 houses, and this year the goal was 4,000 houses.
And
so it's really grown.
Where, in the globe?
There are 500 projects in the United States, and there are 80, I believe it's 80. This is a new book written by Millard Fuller here. It's got some figures. 80 locations in 29 other countries. Mm. And so it's really grown, it's really taken off, and that's the beauty of Habitat. It's pretty radical, yet it's a very simple theory, you know. And
well, do they need people who are structural engineers? You have to have a lot of building experience. Or
it's good to have all that right there, but most of the people that are involved have no experience in construction whatsoever.
Sounds like something hard would be. Oh, you're asleep. Uh-oh. Oh, I think it's just one-on-one here. See, that's what happens when you have a coffee break with food in the morning. Get really relaxed.
Didn't have some caffeine in that coffee.
Well, when you were at your location, were you the only person working with the Committee of Villagers? Or
I was the only American there at my project for about a year, and that got pretty lonely. The first part and the last part, I did have some assistance there.
Mm-hmm.
With the project, and that was good.
And are the volunteers basically from the United States?
Most of them are, yes. Habitat really does try hard to get minorities here in the States involved and in with volunteers, and Habitat has been successful to a certain degree in that. Mm-hmm. But most of the volunteers are male, in their 20s, and single, just like myself.
Well, we're looking for something to do here after we retire, because we're not really interested in just sort of sitting around playing or whatever.
Yeah.
It's never been much interest to us, and we've looked at a number of possibilities, and I think the Lutheran World Missions is sort of cutting back on what they can, you know, do as far as placing people in different world situations, and so we really haven't made any firm decisions, but it's the kind of thing, we get the habitat literature, but it's usually just, please put your money in this envelope.
Yeah, right.
So exactly. I've been just tossing it in the garbage can.
Exactly.
After so many other things that we support, but it sounds, I was really impressed with some of the stateside projects that we've done, and I didn't realize it was an international. What other countries then do you know of?
Well, we're throughout the world. We have other, we work in Central and South America, Africa, Asia. So you've got projects in also Canada and Mexico, Guatemala, Nicaragua, El Salvador, Haiti, Brazil. I had a project in Argentina. Peru is a big country where we have lots of projects. In Africa, you've got projects in Zaire, Kenya, Tanzania, South Africa. The list goes on and on. And we've got projects in India, Pakistan, Egypt, Papua New Guinea, Indonesia, Australia, Solomon Islands. Yeah, it's really grown. I think that the reason why it has grown so much, not only because Millard Fuller, the founder, is such a charismatic speaker and a real cheerleader as far as that goes, but it's a really a fantastic idea and a good way to get people involved. Very, like I was saying, very few people have had any kind of construction background at all. I have. That's what I like, and that's why Habitat appealed to me so much at first, and that's how I got involved, because I'm from Georgia, and Habitat's headquarters is in Georgia.
Of course.
So that just, I just kind of fit right in there.
Well, in the village you were there then, were you there all 3 years in the same location?
Except for the first 2 months. First 2 months I was in a town called Bandaka, and then I went north of there to a town called Gilna.
And how many homes were completed in your...
I would guess about 30 homes, 30 houses.
And now that you're gone, will the committee continue, or does
yes.
it die when you go?
There's a couple there now who took over from me, and another single fellow who is there also, so I think they have 3 volunteers there. Habitat does not work as well, I don't think. Well, it's obvious. Was to me as most volunteers there in Zaire. Also, another country that the Habitat has a lot of problems in would be Haiti. Getting the people to actually come out and help to build their homes. I'd love to encourage.
Why Haitia? Why would the Haitians not? Be prone to do that.
I've been to Haiti only for 10 days, but I went there, and it reminds me a lot of Zaire, very similar.
It's a country I'm really concerned about.
Yes.
And would be one area that...
I think it's one where the people are used to handouts, and same with Zaire, and when they realize that Habitat is not a handout ministry, that you really have to work for what you get, the people are not used to that idea very well. They agree with it and say amen, but will they come out and work that hard? Building a house is a lot of hard work. Mm-hmm. You've got a different work ethic.
Well,
there.
And it's not an instant gratification either.
No.
Because it's probably, what does it take you, several months?
It depends on how many people show up to build. You can build... These houses in the third world that Habitat builds are not like houses that we build here in America. So there's no plumbing, no electricity. Habitat doesn't do that. So they cost about $2,000 and would take, you know, if you get, had enough people there, you could build two houses in a month, you know.
What were the houses Audrey was, she was making the lumber. They had the lumber, she ran the lumber.
Oh, you just had a foundation and then they were...
I was trying to think, they were wood, and, but they were open.
No, they had a foundation.
Yeah.
Then they were framed, and they had a roof. They had a roof.
And, but they were open, on one side, because that is, would be more natural for the, she was in the central part of Nicaragua.
No.
And they built them based on what a
traditional
house would be, yes. With a cook stove in one side, brick, I think it was a brick oven or something, wasn't it, for the tortillas and the beans and stuff. They, in other words, they tried very hard to make sure that the house was the same kind of home that would be comfortable.
Exactly.
To the people,
yes.
And what they would be used to.
It's very important. You have to include the community in on this. You have to make sure that you build, whatever you build, the people are going to want.
Right. And I think they also built a school, was one of their first projects.
Mm-hmm.
And that seemed to sort of get the people excited.
Mm-hmm.
And they did the same thing. It was a co-op, a Sandinista co-op.
Mm-hmm.
And they... basically, they did have the cooperation of the government, but of course it was, they were going against, of course, USA policy.
Yes, right.
We always wondered if we made contributions, were we going to be labeled communists or something? You never know.
I understand a lot of Christians providing some type of ministry down in Central America have been asked if they're communists.
I'm sure they would be,
so,
and shot occasionally,
yeah.
I suppose.
The projects in Central America, from what I understand, with Habitat have worked quite well. The people are much more enthusiastic about it and show it with their hard labor, you know.
Well, and that's good, and I suppose you would have trouble getting people to be feel that they could actually do the work. You would have to build a skill level.
Wouldn't we had a few carpenters and a few masons, and as you work, those people will assist you and tell you how it's done. The construction on these houses is really very simple, and you have to make sure that it is so you can get that participation. So you don't have to have very much skilled labor. The people, the Zaireans there, have always been used to building their own houses, and Habitat doesn't want to change that.
Yeah.
They want to make sure that you can build this house also.
And are they not building them just because they don't know how to get the materials, or just because they have found some other cheap way to build?
That was a lot of my job. My personal job is trying to get those materials, make sure that they were there. At the site, and so it would be possible to build the house. Also, like I was saying, we try and use as much materials in the location as possible.
Did Habitat provide you with some subsistence pay, or are you on your own? Or
yeah, we got, volunteers got a stipend, and of $300 a month. Which was not much, but actually
plenty
very
there,
plenty
I
over
would
there.
Think, yeah.
It was certainly enough.
And then you paid your own transportation?
No, the transportation to and from the country and anything related to work was paid for by the project or Habitat.
Did you feel threatened? Were you, did you feel in that you were in a dangerous situation?
No. There in Zaire, there is some fighting in the east, but there in Ecuador, very peaceful, actually. No famine, no civil war, like that happens so often in the third world, even and in Africa. I think that's one of the reasons Mobutu is able to stay in power, because after the Belgians left Zaire in 60, they were in civil war for 5 years. And Mobutu was the person that was able to bring peace to the country. But a lot of the younger people now don't know anything about that. And Mobutu's time is running out.
Well, it's still a very
yes.
stratified, I'm sure.
Yes. But, yeah, the Zaireans know that war is going on in other countries close to home, so they are grateful that that is not occurring.
Well, you're landlocked there. What is the trade? What is the item of trade? Do they sell?
Well, you have one. The river inlet goes to the Atlantic, but that's the only part. You got about 20 miles of coastline to this tremendous country. It's mm-hmm. the third largest country in Africa. And the main transportation would be by boat and truck. The trains are pretty much not running too well.
Yeah.
And so as far as trade, you would have palm oil. You have lots of palm wine too, but that doesn't go too far. Mm-hmm. If it did, there's no way to refrigerate it or anything like that. So it stays right there in the vicinity.
Well, palm oils really come under attack because of the cholesterol. The
yes.
buyers are not buying it.
Yes, that's
and
right.
What was that? The same way at Rabaul
mm-hmm.
and Papua New Guinea area. The Trovians, did they use?
No, I've been seeing the coconut oil too.
Coconut oil and
yeah.
palm oil have come under severe disfavor,
yeah.
and I don't think Betty Crocker uses it anymore.
Mm.
Whatever, whoever, and the mm-hmm. Wesson and all those people. So they were having a really bad time in, what is the island that the bull is?
New Britain.
New Britain, right.
Mm.
They were
That's
having
right.
a real economic.
Yeah. They also grow coffee. And there was a coffee glut when I left last year, and so all the coffee farmers were complaining that the price had gone mm-hmm. down. Coffee was almost worthless.
Right. So
yeah.
even Papua New Guinea is faced with that
yes.
problem too. So there's only so many products.
That's right. They could export a whole lot of good stuff, and it's a very rich and fertile country,
mm-hmm.
and with a lot of potential.
Mm-hmm.
If it were to be organized with a transportation system and all, a good communication system, and then once you got that going, you would have a good agricultural system.
Mm-hmm.
But people aren't encouraged to grow crops for more than their own selves because they can't get it to market.
So that's the road system.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, if you had that system in there though, it is thought that Zaire could feed the whole continent of Africa. It's so rich.
Mm, and that's certainly needed.
Yes. Also down in the southern, southeastern part, you have diamonds and some gold,
mm.
special, valuable stones,
mm.
like they would have in southern Africa area, Zambia and Zimbabwe.
Mm.
So, you have that to export. You also have lumber to export, but in that respect, you hate to see all that lumber go because there's really not a whole lot that they have no. There's not very many reforestation programs going. So, if they were, it's a catch-22. If they were developed, they'd be a lot. They'd probably be in the situation. A similar situation that Brazil is in with the Amazon being burned down for the sake of crops. And it would, until the people realize that you can't grow the money crops, that you're not doing yourself any good, like cocoa and tea and coffee, and I think the world has got enough bananas and pineapple. You could grow a lot of that also.
Is there an agricultural ministry?
Oh yes.
And it's a joke. Huh?
Oh yeah. It's the government. The whole government is a joke. The whole system is completely falling apart through corruption and mismanagement.
Okay.
And it's even gotten so bad that Mobutu is considered one of the richest men in the world.
Mm-hmm, that's what I understood
and,
from his lawyer.
He's created an example for everyone else in government to follow, so it's corrupt and mismanaged from the top down to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And he's created a monster, that will take another 25 years to undo, probably.
Oh, sure.
No matter who gets in power after him. So it's a very, it's tragic, and there's no real way for people to get ahead. But Habitat is trying to provide housing so that you don't have to spend as much time out looking for food, preparing food, so you'll be have a healthier environment to live in. So hopefully the person and the family living within the Habitat house will develop as a family, as a person, you know, with each generation. And education is so important as far as every, as far as agriculture is concerned, to educate the people, as far as Habitat. Education, if they lose the reasoning and the purpose behind doing these things, then it's basically shot, you know, mm-hmm. unless they understand why you're there. And as far as teachers in the secondary schools and elementary schools, also education in general is so important. You can take a person, a young child, out of the bush and put them through high school, elementary school, and high school, and it really makes an incredible difference. I never really thought about education that much until I saw mm-hmm. how it can change a person over there, and it really can. Even as poorly as the education system is over there, it can really make a difference. It's really amazing. But I only wish they had some jobs to go to with that education once they got out.
Well, that has been, from what we understand, in Papua New Guinea, they are educating the kids, and the Lutheran Church provides schools. Well, they educate them till sixth grade, and then the Lutheran Church, and I suppose there are a few other sponsors, have schools that go seventh and eighth grade. And then when, as we understood it from a number of people when we were over there, when the kids get out of eighth grade, they have too much education to go back to the village. Because if they go back to the village, they're expected to go back to the same role they would have had if they hadn't gotten the education.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't really want to go back to the village.
That's
they
right.
They know too much. But with an eighth grade education, there's really not any job they are prepared to do.
Mm.
So then they gravitate toward the cities. And they're not, they're really not comfortable in their old village, and they can't fit in the city, so at least there they form these bands that they call rascals.
Hmm.
And they're simply crime gangs. I mean, juvenile delinquents on a mass order.
Hmm.
And it's just upsetting the whole country. I mean, you can't go out after 6 o'clock because they rule.
Hmm.
And so
this is in Papua New Guinea?
In Papua New Guinea. So I would suppose that the system, although different, culturally different, the same kind of thing would be likely to happen if no jobs or advanced training is provided.
Zaire is a big country, it would be much bigger than New Guinea.
Mm-hmm.
And most people, if they make it to the eighth grade, will go ahead and finish.
We'll do more.
We'll finish. Really want to.
And anymore. Then what? Then where? Can
but
they
then
go?
Once they
then
finish,
they
once they finish, they have. There would be a need for some manual labor from these people, and yet they feel like they're above manual labor in many cases, and there's no jobs, and they'll go back home and live with mom and dad.
Mm-hmm.
And sponge off them,
mm-hmm.
which is really sad. So.
But then they could maybe get involved in a Habitat program.
Possibly.
Or
for at least a home, yeah. And,
probably have to put the plastic glasses.
And We try and not be a source of employment, though. Habitat became that when it first started in Zaire, and it had like 55 people employed, and it became a construction company, and we really don't want to do that. We're trying to stay away from that. Provide employment for a little, for, you know, just a handful of people. But
there are people that go back and report to the government if you, for example, do a little social education during the process of building. Talking about how nice roads would be, or how important it would be to have some communication channels. Do you have to really watch yourself?
Yeah, you really do need to be careful of what you say. If you can, you know, the people there themselves know the situation and know that it's better on the outside. They know that the government lies to them. And it's really up to them and to take part of it. Now, if they were to have an uprising or revolt, then it's your decision whether to follow that or not. And it's their decision whether for them to ask you to participate.
You better get the heck out of there if they have an uprising.
Yeah, well, it depends, you know. You can really see where your heart is and whether you really care for the people. You have an option, and they don't, to leave or to stay. And I've never run into this situation before, but I would, and each situation would vary from town to town and uprising to uprising. I don't think that we should support a violent uprising in any case, but I think you should be in solidarity with the people and be willing to suffer with them. That's what I like so much about Habitat's grassroots, is that it's like one I read this article written by an elderly lady in Papua New Guinea, and she says something to the basis of if you have come to help us out and give us a hand, stay home. But if you're willing to live with us and be amongst us and live our life, mm-hmm. please come. You're welcome.
Mm, yeah, you know?
And I think that's where what really makes a difference. It doesn't matter whether you're building houses or whatever your vocation is over there, whatever your work is, but it's what counts is who you are to those people,
mm-hmm.
not what you say, but how you live. And do you stay amongst other missionaries, other expatriates, or do you socialize with the people there? And I'm a firm believer, if you can't socialize with the people there and become one of them, then you mm-hmm. shouldn't be there.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really important anywhere. It's easier to do as Americans in America, because you are an American,
yeah.
you know.
You speak the language.
That's right. But over in a foreign country where everything is so different, you know, it's so important to learn the language, to learn the culture, and become a part of that culture and not be on the outside living like an American in a third world, a rich American in some third world country. And so I think that's really important, whatever type of ministry you're providing. So.
Hmm. Will you return and work with Habitat?
I think I'm planning on returning to the third world, and I'm interested in Asia now rather than Central Africa there in Zaire. And it could be with Habitat, or it may be with someone else, or mm-hmm. another group that really emphasizes grassroots and living simply.
Mm-hmm.
And not taking, you know, dozens of barrels of junk with you over there and living in a nice big house, which I saw so much of, which was really disappointing, of other missionaries.
From missionaries?
Yes, from missionaries that are from the States.
Uh-huh.
And those missionaries were resented by the masses also.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that's true, not just where I was, but I came to find out that's true most everywhere. Mm-hmm. That, many of the missionaries, not it's not an exception, you know, it's closer to the norm. Mm-hmm. That we take our culture instead of Christ with us, we take our American culture, mm-hmm. which is pretty ugly. So, I plan on returning somewhere, sometime, with who, I'm not sure. And when I get to the point where I can't stand to live so simply anymore, then it's time to come home where I can
make money
live,
or something.
Where I can live simply here in the States, which is not near as simply as it is over in the third world, you know. And meant to be a witness to both the poor and the rich, so mm-hmm. in whatever format that is.
But you did see zebras in Zaire.
No, I didn't.
Oh, you didn't even travel to the side that had them?
No, I really wanted to. I understand that that part of Zaire is very beautiful. I heard one fellow say that had traveled throughout Africa. It's the prettiest place in all of Africa, the Runazores mountains and lots of different wildlife. Mostly where I was, we had lots of monkeys. a lot of the big game had already been hunted out because the population has grown so much. But no, I'm afraid I didn't make it over there. Made it to Kenya and saw some zebras in Kenya.
Oh, well, I guess that'll do. Well, how does that sound? Does habitat sound interesting?
Yeah, it's really good that there are so many projects in the States because so many different channels you can plug into.
We really
get people
enjoy
involved.
Being in Papua New Guinea, and we were out in the bush a little bit, but we were there such a short time we really didn't get involved in any village life at all. But that's a fascinating place to be in.
Mm-hmm. Completely different world.
That's okay.
Takes a lot of adjusting. It took about a year before the language and the culture clicked.
Mm-hmm.
And after that year, that next 6 months was really an enriching time as far as learning. Because I knew enough to really get, then start to really get deep into the culture and language.
Did they provide any language training or orientation?
Well, a lot of that is, hopefully, is provided by, if you choose to go with an organization, which you probably would, just because it's easier.
Yeah.
Hopefully that organization will provide something like that. Habitat stressed how important the language was, but there in Zaire, I felt kind of like they needed a stronger language program, and I was disappointed they weren't willing to provide a stronger language program.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully that'll change. But what I did, basically I had a small book that had English and Lingala in it, which was the language I learned, and I had a tutor
mm-hmm.
who would come every day for a couple hours and go over the lessons in the book and just take a walk down to the market and to the shops and just try and intermingle with the people and force yourself to say something, even if you say it wrongly. You know, just say, I'm trying to learn your language, and the people will really appreciate that and laugh with you, you know, if you make a mistake, not at you, you know, hopefully.
Yes, we've had some interesting language experiences, trying to pretend like we knew the language. I think they saw right through it. Did you have any? You woke up, though.
Where are y'all from?
Hood Canal area.
Is that in Washington?
Georgia.
Yeah, I don't know my geography out here too well.
Yeah, it'll be west of Seattle. There's a canal that comes in from the Straits of Juan de Fuca that comes
uh-huh.
down and makes a little fish hook. It's called Hood Canal.
Uh-huh.
And it's a lot of lakes in that region.
Uh-huh.
So that's where we are, on the Olympic Peninsula.
Mm.
It's very beautiful.
Yeah, I've heard about the Olympic Peninsula.
Yeah,
very pretty place to be.
Very pretty, right. Very different from this beauty. This is a different kind of
rock.
High Mountains. Mm-hmm. And you're from Georgia?
Yeah, from Georgia.
And how did you hear about Holden?
I heard about it. I guess this session is over with. Any other questions about it?
That's probably it. So they're taping, I see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I probably ought to go in there and take the tape off and throw it away.
Really?
I heard about Holden through another Christian community there in Georgia called Quantinia Partners. And they're located just south of Americus, Georgia, where Habitat is located. And actually, Habitat kind of stemmed through that community. Mm-hmm. And it's a Christian community that started off in the 60s with during the racial strife and trouble down there was at its height. Mm-hmm. So it's very radical thing. But anyway, I checked for their summer program and a list of any other Christian communities they knew of, and they knew of Holden. And so I've been to Jackson Hole, Wyoming one summer, and I wanted to come back out west and see Washington. So it fit right in.
Yeah.
So I signed on for a month, not knowing what exactly it'd be like. Decided to stay the summer, and now I'm here for a year.
Oh, you are going to stay a year. What are you doing? What's your?
I'm doing the plumbing here. Trying to, anyway.
Hey, they didn't plumb in Zaire.
Yeah, no, they sure didn't.
A new skill.
Yeah. That's right.
Oh, that's great. Well, I know Lisa Johnson. I think came up for what she thought she'd spend about 6 months here, and that's lengthened into something like 18 months.
Yeah, that happens.
Yeah, I think she's supposed to go home in December, and she's thinking, oh, do I really want to do this?
It's been a beautiful experience here.
Good.
I needed a lot of, it was really stressful in Zaire and for me. A lot of things, you know, you go over there with all these big ideas and not many of them materialize.
You do really little things.
And so this has, helped me put it all in perspective here at Holden. It's been a real healing and joyful time, So I really appreciate this place, and I hope to develop my inner self, and do a lot of reading and stuff.
Well, there's certainly the resources.
And then go out again,
I'm really interested in agriculture. There's a place in California that teaches intensive farming, where you use a small plot and a small amount of water, and you grow vegetables close together, and it's
very good.
And yeah, I need to do a lot more reading about it, but it doesn't sound like they need that in Zaire. It sounds like Papua New Guinea, where the stakes grow. You try to plant a, put a fence in, and it grows.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, thank you for the information.
Well, thank you for coming.
Interesting.
I didn't think many people were going to be here this
really?
Morning.
I thought it was just a great subject.
Great subject text, huh?
It's interesting to know that Habitat is not just a stateside.
Yes, it's very much international and growing like wildfire, and it's a good ministry to be involved in.
Oh, okay.